Welcome, everybody. We'll call to order the House Committee on Higher Ed. Great to have you all here today. We're excited for a fun-filled month of work and ready to go. And our first order of business is going to be adopting our committee rules. Is there a motion? Oh, I have to open an organizational meeting, okay, that will give us the purpose of adopting our committee rules. Any motion that we'd like to make?
Mr. Chair? I move adoption of the committee rules.
Okay. It's been moved by Representative Dembrough that we would adopt the committee rules. Is there any discussion about that? Representative Greenlee.
Yes, I'd like to ask the committee administrator a question. I'd like to ask whether these rules include by reference all of the House rules, and if that's the case, would it be necessary for a member to declare a conflict of interest if they have it, and would they, under our rules, be forced to vote on an issue in which they have a conflict of interest?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, I believe the Chief Clerk of the House would be able to answer that question much better than I.
Thank you.
Would the Chief Clerk of the House approach the dais, please?
Good afternoon. My name is Ramona Kennedy Line. I'm Chief Clerk and Parliamentarian for the House of Representatives. Mr. Co-Chair Brimbrough, Representative Greenlee. The committee rules state that, in fact, the committee will operate in accordance with House rules, and under House Rule Subsection 321, Announcement of Conflict of Interest, it states that if a member is involved in an actual or potential conflict of interest, they shall announce the conflict in committee and the nature of the conflict prior to voting, and such announcement shall be recorded in the committee minutes. Under House Rule 3.20, the House Rule states that no member shall be allowed to abstain from voting. Specifically to your question, if you have an actual or potential conflict, you will need to declare that conflict in committee, and you will be required to vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a result of that, I'll be voting no on the minutes,
on the motion.
On the rules, on the motion for the rules, because it seems to me improper that somebody with a conflict, actual conflict, actually votes. So.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Any further lack of support, put it that way? Okay. Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that Representative Greenlee has made a good case for this, and there have been instances where I have had to declare a conflict of interest. They were possible conflicts of interest. There was never anything approaching direct financial benefit coming from a vote, but many of us have had to do this. It does seem odd at times that we would make the statement and then vote nonetheless, kind of as if we were wiping the slate clean. I was on another committee with Representative Greenlee today, and I did not vote against the rules.
Would you like to rescind that vote?
Yes, could you roll that committee back? No, I'm explaining why I'm going to vote now differently than I did on that committee.
All right. Further discussion? Further dissension? So
you
moved.
Call the roll?
We can call the roll if you'd rather like to have the roll.
I just like to make sure my no vote is recorded.
Would the administrator call the roll, please?
Representative Parker?
No.
Representative Hunt?
Excuse.
Aye.
Representative Sheehan?
Excused.
Co-Vice Chair Greenlee?
No.
Co-Vice Chair Springer?
Yes.
Co-Chair Dembrough?
Yes.
Co-Chair Johnson?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Motion passes. We'll close the organizational meeting, and we will now open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 4056. Do we have a list of the testifiers?
Do we want to go for the amendment first?
Certainly. Do we have the amendment in front of us? Chair? Thank you.
Dash 2?
I thought these are the dash 2.
We have dash 2 amendments, correct. See, Victoria can give us a little brief. That does.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The measure in itself creates a task force on STEM access and success research and report on strategies for encouraging students to study science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, establishes a STEM fund for purpose of providing scholarships to science, technology, engineering, and mathematics students. The effects of the proposed committee amendment would be to allow the task force to accept donations of staff support, office space, and equipment from businesses and advocacy organizations to assist in the performance of its functions. It also precludes legislative members from the task force from receiving mileage reimbursement or per diem for work on the task force, and expands the legislative membership to 2 senators and 2 representatives.
Okay. And just to refresh our memory, we had a hearing on this during our January time together, and a really great hearing, I thought, by the way. Subsequent to that, Representative Dembro and I were able to participate in a roundtable discussion in Hood River at the Columbia Gorge Community College, where we brought together numerous private sector partners. We had folks from the K-12 level, folks from the community college level, and a really great discussion about STEM. And it's just reinforced, I think, my viewpoint or my opinion, I think Representative Dembro's too, that this is a very compelling area, not just in certain localized areas of the state, but really within Oregon at large. And it really is an issue that I think we need to give our full attention to and encourage as much as possible as we try to achieve the expectations that we've laid out in front of us regarding 40-40-20 as a state, but also as we talk about workforce development and job training and just doing a better job of stimulating in young minds an appetite for STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and math. And I think we're at a really key point, I think, within Oregon, where we have a chance to really focus that. In light of not having a lot of additional financial resources we can pour into public ed, we can put in place some policies that I think encourage greater private sector investment, and I think that this bill could be one of those vehicles that could enable that and help that. So with that, we do have someone to testify here today specifically to the area of how we can provide support for this committee that will lessen the need for a negative fiscal impact, which might not be helpful to us. So I'd like to call up Morgan Anderson, and is Jim Craven, are you going to testify at the same time too, please?
I know.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Lindsay?
Just a point of clarification. Are they going to be testifying on the dash?
Twos.
To the dash twos? Twos as well, along with it. Okay. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much, Co-Chair Johnson and Co-Chair Dembro and members of the committee. My name is Morgan Anderson. I am Intel's Higher Education and Government Affairs Manager. And you might remember on January 19th, there were a number of individuals, including myself, that came to testify in support of this bill. We had FIRST Robotics, Portland State University. We had students and others that testified to lend support of LC 251. And we're pleased to see that it's progressing forward as House Bill 4056-2. We all heard how critical a rich background in STEM education is for the success of students entering into the knowledge economy. So I won't reemphasize the same points that we all heard back on the 19th, but I will tell you that the education community and the business community is very, very hungry for this coalition or for this legislation so that we can have coordination and alignment of STEM education at all levels of our system. And we are ready to support the goals of this bill. The amendments of this bill will allow more expertise to participate in the task force, lending to better outcomes. We fully support these amendments and welcome additional legislators, business members, and education experts to lend their voices and ideas. As well, Intel and the Oregon Business Council have met, and we are willing to provide logistical support to help minimize costs where we can. So at this point, I think I'll just say that we support this bill with its amendments, and we urge your support as well.
Thank you. Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Dembro, Jim Craven representing Tech America. Tech America is a national trade association representing the high-tech industry. I was present at the creation back in 1997 when we were known as the American Electronics Association, AEA, when we worked with this body to do the original legislation that built ETIC. What we found pretty soon when that bill was focused on doing a better job at the higher education level, but it became pretty evident pretty quick that it doesn't, you can build all the higher education systems you want, but if there's nobody in the pipeline, you're not going to be successful. So ETIC has already, as you've heard in prior presentations, spends part of its resources actually supporting STEM education programs. And I think what this task force will do is move us down the road. Obviously, there are a lot of people working very hard on this already, and hopefully this will bring a little bit of structure to it and a little bit of recognition. And we just really appreciate your support and your interest in this issue that will only get more important as the years go on. So thank you so much, and we support the bill with the dash two amendments.
Great. Any questions for our panel?
Yes.
Representative Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if this is a better question for you or for someone of the committee, but and if it is for them, just let me know. But I just saw it seemed like this task force expanded quite a bit with the amendments from 7 to 16 and 5 to 12. And it's been my experience, the bigger the entity, the more a few people have control. And anyway, I'm just like to have maybe someone talk to that as to why it's got that big. Or
I can maybe speak to that. You know, I think we recognized even during the hearings 2 weeks ago that the number of seven in the bill was too small and that we really needed to expand to get necessary voices to be part of the conversation. So, you know, we've added a couple of students, you know, one from at the high school level, one at the post-secondary level, teachers, in part because, you know, I know I was very impressed at that roundtable at Hood River, as I'm sure Rep. Johnson was, at the testimony we got from the teachers, the frontline teachers who are working in CTE and STEM. And it seemed really important that they, you know, people from that real world be at the table. Mm-hmm. We added a few more, again, just to give us the balance of education and industry. And there was a feeling that we should add a couple of legislators as well so that we have two from each chamber, one from each party from each chamber. That would give not only a political balance, but the opportunity for greater outreach to the caucuses. I agree with your concern. I mean, what I hear is a potential concern that the thing could become so large that it would be unwieldy. But again, this is, you know, it's kind of a fine line that you walk. I don't think I would want this to be any bigger than it is.
No.
And But I think this is a manageable. I think this is a manageable number for this kind of work, where the goal is to coordinate a number of initiatives that are happening around the state, but at the same time to bring real-world frontline expertise.
Just to piggyback on the Representative Dembro's comments, one of the areas that I think I'm excited about would be under the amendments here, but in terms of the business and corporate involvement, and that was what we saw in our roundtable in Hood River. We had a representative there from Google. And then we also had representatives from small high-tech companies within the Hood River area itself, software, unmanned aerial vehicles sort of stuff. So it's great to get a perspective of the large corporate interests about what their needs are and how they can help facilitate, but also from the other level, the smaller companies, how they can help provide by mentorships, maybe after-school programs, that kind of stuff, because they're maybe a little more nimble, perhaps, than the larger corporations are in some of that. So it's nice to have a blend, I think, of large corporations versus smaller high-tech industries or whatever, too. I think this just, again, have a better perspective on how this can all work together for the good of the whole. So, was there any other comments or questions then?
Yeah, I have two, but the first is to follow up on this one. I see a lot of objectives of the task force. And the question is, which of those objectives would be better served by committee of 16 than a committee of 7? I mean, there's that old story that if you're trying to dig a hole, you know, one person digging, it helps. When you then you get two people digging, and that helps. But somewhere along the line, you get 16 people digging in that hole, and what most people do is bump into each other most of the time.
Yeah. Hey, can I follow up on that?
Certainly.
You know what? You know, remember what we're trying to, what we're working on here is the pipeline, and so we want to make sure that there's representatives from, you know, the various points in the pipeline. So, you know, in the original form, maybe we had one teacher. But, you know, really, we need somebody, I believe, from the high school sector, from the community college, from the university. And same thing with students. It would be different if this were a committee that were just focusing on university STEM. I think we need this degree of representation.
Right. Second question has to do with the part of the dash twos that define the members that have been officially named by the Speaker and the President of the House as volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a precedent to officially name? I mean, it reminds you of the Army. Whoever wants to volunteer, say two steps forward, you and you. This seems a little odd to have an officially appointed volunteer.
Go ahead, you can explain, Mike.
I've been in that position in the past, yes, and I believe that I did have the opportunity to decline the request, but you know it was an issue I was interested in, and so I was willing to do it on my own resources.
Mr. Chair, to speak to that, I think certainly in the last several years there has been other precedent of that. It's a way to avoid fiscal impact.
I understand. Most of us don't care. I mean, that's not an issue. But it just seems like a sort of anomaly to have an officially appointed volunteer.
Yeah. No, I agree. And for the record, it was Representative Hunt who appointed me to that unpaid assignment.
And it's not that everybody else stepped backwards?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you for your testimony today. Could you speak maybe, Morgan, a little bit specifically, sure, I guess, about the type of support that you think you all could provide to lessen the need for other resources to make the work of this committee possible?
Absolutely, Mr. Co-Chairs. Intel and Oregon Business Council and their sister organization, Employers for Education Excellence, are entering into an agreement to do much of the same type of work where we are engaging different stakeholders to advance STEM education. And Oregon Business Council will be able to support in locating meeting rooms providing the setup and logistical support. There was some concern about public meeting notification and following the public meeting requirements, and that was the area that was solely of concern. All other logistical support we feel we could provide.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that. Thanks, both of you.
Thank you.
Any other follow-up?
Just thank you very much.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Marcia Kelly. Is this the list?
Good afternoon, Representative Johnson, Representative Dimber, and members of the committee. My name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm the public policy advocate for the American Association of University Women. This is an issue, STEM education, that's been long dear to the heart of the American Association of University Women. We belong to national collaboratives that work on STEM education for girls. So there's some expertise on a national level that you could draw upon and not always reinvent the wheel. From a local standpoint, I just chaired the 25th Expanding Your Horizon Conference for middle school girls. And I would urge you not to overlook the opportunities that we might have for some short-term conferences that could be developed. Because let me tell you about my experience with this. We have the use of facilities at Willamette University. They donate the facility use. which is very, very generous. If we were going to have to rent it, it would be $10,000. Salem Hospital donates money so that we can send out a brochure to every middle school girl in the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade in Salem and all of the homeschool parents, because the addressing is done through the school district. We have to pay the school district for the addressing, but we don't have any of the addresses for the girls. So, and I'm sort of giving you an overview so that you know what could be done on a local level, mm-hmm. other places. And we recruit women who use science, technology, engineering, or math, and the kids get to go to three classes on a Saturday morning and talk to real women, do hands-on experiences. It's not a thorough thing, but it sometimes dispers their interest. It also lets them learn that there are other kids in other schools that may like math and science. And at some ages, this is really important. So one of the things that I would urge this task force to do is also look at ways that a similar program could be developed for around the state with volunteers. There used to be one down at Klamath Falls that OTI put on. There used to be one at the University of Portland. Ours is in the 25th year. We had 160 girls this year. We had inquiries from Hood River about how they could get their kids involved in this. But they found out about it so late that it wasn't really possible. But we've had kids from the Oregon coast and by Triangle Lake, Blatchley, near Triangle Lake in Eugene, come to our conference. It would be good to have a conference for young guys, and I'm talking to some volunteers in Salem to see what we can do to start one for young guys. We think an eighth grade start would be good for the guys. All my counselors and middle school teachers say it's a little bit later when they start getting interested in some of these things. So I would just offer that remember to keep the volunteer base and other organizations, not only the businesses involved, because you might be able to benefit from our experience. It's really great.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Just to follow up, thank you very much for those comments. And we do have two spots on the task force for people who work in mentoring and partnership kinds of capacities, because obviously this is not something that can be done just through our schools. The schools have to be involved, no doubt about it, but a lot of it will happen outside of school in Saturday programs, after-school programs, you know, robotics-type programs and, you know, other things in the healthcare field.
And I understand that. I also understand that volunteers, you know, are at a premium. I agree totally with Mr. Craven's discussion about the pipeline. It's not too early to start this. And when we start funding education so that we can really pay attention to the to kids in schools, that will be really good too. The program is actually a national program called Expanding Your Horizons, and so there are resources for that as well.
Mm-hmm. And can I just say one thing? And you know, one other aspect of the bill that, you know, I feel very good about is that it charges this group with recommending strategies that allow students in low-income and underrepresented populations to have access to STEM, success in STEM. And I think that is really critical, that you know, that the STEM pipeline be open to all, and that those who've been historically left out of the pipeline get pushed up through it.
I understand wholly. I would probably have been one of those kids if I was in the STEM thing that would have needed help. We have scholarships for our program, and it's just sort of basically, what can you afford? You know, the lunch is $5. Can you afford that? We found that a totally free program is not probably the best way to go, but a little tiny bit of an encouragement into it, and we have a scholarship fund to do that, just because we want to make sure that that kids who might not have the resources to just have their parents write a check for $20 can still attend, and we make sure that that does happen.
Thank you very much. Representative Frederick, would you like to share something with us today?
Wouldn't mind. Thank you.
Please.
I Hello there. I'm Representative Lou Frederick, District 43, North and Northeast Portland. Hello, committee chairs and committee. It's good to see you. I wanted to say a couple things, and it piggybacks on some of the things that Representative Dembro was saying as well. For me, it's a matter of looking at the demographics and the fact that we are not using all of the minds that we have available to us in our community. They're not getting a chance to tap into, when I was a reporter, tap into a real simple thing, curiosity. And that's what the STEM actually does. It's taking a look at what's curious about the world and getting a chance to look at it and find out new things. As much as we possibly can, I'd like to encourage us to make sure that we are, in fact, bringing in the low-income and other demographics. The demographics of the racial and ethnic demographics of the state have changed significantly over the last few years. They are going to continue to change, and if we are not making sure that those kids and those families are getting a chance to be part of this this growth, it's a mistake on the part of everyone, just flat out. And you can't do that necessarily by looking at reading scores. Reading scores don't tell us a lot about that. We need to be able to understand what kind of science kids are getting, and we need to be, if we're going to be measuring something, we should be measuring how many experiments they're doing in biology and chemistry and physics at an early age. Now, I can't be the model for that. My father put me in the lab when I was 4 years old in his biology lab and said, we're going to watch a plant, we're going to watch these seeds grow. But my dad was, he tends to do that. He's a botanist, and he tends to like to do that kind of thing. I can't expect that everyone's going to do that, but you know, I got to tell you, I sort of like the idea that every four-year-old gets a chance to watch a seed grow and talk about what's happening with plants and what the clouds are about and what the moon looks like and how a frog might do certain might grow and move in certain ways. That's the kind of thing we need to start early, and we need to make sure that we're encouraging it all the way through. STEM does that, and we need to find whatever ways we can to support it. In my view, whether that's financial, which would be good, but certainly in making sure that the biologists and the chemists and the curious adults out there are actually talking with the children on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So if we can do that, that's what I'd like to see us do. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. I heartily agree with what you're advocating for. And say in our own district in Hood River County, you know, we with our robotics competitions and so forth, you know, we've got you know, numerous participants, you know, that are also part of our ELL population, you know. But again, it's about awareness raising at an early level, you know, those minds that there is something to aspire to, and that, you know, math and science and all this stuff can be fun, you know, and simply building Legos and stuff is a great segue into something else that can be much more applicable and much more beneficial academically for these kids. So I agree, the earlier we can start that little mind processing differently, the better. So,
well, you never know when we're going to find somebody who actually manages to get an even sweeter or tartar apple out of the river, you know.
Out of the apple brandy bottle.
The good Lord does a good job of that.
Well, yeah, but we've been helping along for quite a while.
Exactly.
Thank you again.
Appreciate it. Dr. Karen Maringale from OUS.
Good afternoon, co-chairs Dembro and Johnson and members of the committee. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you today about STEM. My name is Karen Maringale. I'm the Assistant Vice Chancellor for Academic Standards and Collaborations at the Oregon University System. And I have a PhD in mathematics education and a background in mathematics. And I worked at the National Science Foundation, so I have some experience with STEM. What I wanted to talk to you about today was the role of OUS in this task force and its relationship to initiatives going on at OUS. STEM in the Oregon University system is complex and multifaceted. At the system level, we coordinate efforts all the way from ETIC to robotics competitions statewide to bringing together improvements to math and science teacher preparation among the six universities that offer teacher preparation programs in the public sector. We also coordinate with local businesses to stimulate metals research. So at the system-wide level, our hand in STEM is wide-reaching. When you get onto the individual seven campuses, things get even more complex. We have schools and colleges of education that have numerous initiatives to improve the education and the preparation of teachers in math and science from pre-K through 12. Those same schools and colleges of education are partnering with local school districts in the area to work with practicing teachers and provide authentic opportunities for their pre-service teachers to get in and understand what the realities of K-12 schools are like. We also have faculty at the universities who are engaging in STEM research and bringing in millions of dollars to stimulate the Oregon economy, employing both undergraduate students and partnering with local businesses and industries. We provide a pipeline to those businesses and industries and other partners throughout Oregon. We also educate the future STEM workforce and STEM leaders in the state. And we provide outreach at our campuses to K-12 students who are interested or who might be interested in STEM. So it's very important for us to have a seat at the table in this task force because we have so much to contribute and so many of our initiatives are tightly aligned with what the task force work will be doing. I also want to point out or echo some of the comments that have previously been made. I applaud your inclusion of underrepresented groups in this bill because in some cases in computer science and engineering in particular, the situation has actually gotten worse over the past decades. We've not made progress. We've actually reverted and the achievement gap has grown bigger. I also urge you to think about including what we used to call NSF, informal science education opportunities. So these are opportunities at museums and in non-standard school settings that have been shown to really increase the participation of underrepresented groups in STEM. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the presentation and for bringing all your expertise to us here. I've been to the National Academies buildings a couple of times, and I wonder if you worked at the one by State or maybe over on Fifth Avenue Northwest.
Representative, I was in Arlington.
Okay. I've only been in that building once, and I don't recall it as well. But my point
is this leading up to a conflict of interest, Representative?
Is there Starbucks on the corner?
I work at it. No, my point is that in both of the buildings that I'm referring to, there is tremendously communicative art used to convey the science. All right? There's a gallery in the upstairs at the place right down by the Einstein sculpture that always has fantastic photographic or paint exhibits. The walls of the Keck Center in Northwest are astonishing in how they present really detailed mathematical scientific information in a really artistic manner. So, again, I'm going to say let's do everything we can for these folks, and if there is some way to bring the arts into this or on a parallel path, and I don't think we're actually going to put it into STEM, making steam, but if we could get something parallel coming in, weren't my idea. I did think of it, but others thought of it before me. So
that may be another bill for another time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Harker. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I just follow up on that? You know, when we had the roundtable at Hood River, I was really struck by a couple of the people testifying from area businesses. One, a guy from In Situ, which is, you know, a growing firm out in the valley. And he made the particular point that STEM education, when it works, is all about building creativity. You know, that we think of STEM and we think of, you know, people, you know, just doing figures and, you know, it's all about, you know, just math and calculations, et cetera. But people who do STEM successfully are using those same mental resources that people do who do the arts. And, you know, there's something about our educational system that is unfortunately not nurturing those creative instincts. And they talked a lot about that, and that you know, that on a certain level, STEM is about manipulation of things, you know, physical manipulation, and we also don't want to have an arbitrary separation between CTE and STEM. I mean, in many cases, those two, you know, whether somebody is doing you know, woodworking or sheet metal, or is you know, building a robot, I mean, it's in many cases the same sort of activity. They both involve math, they both involve calculation, but they essentially involve creating new ways of looking at the world.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Appreciate having you here today. We did have Bruce Schaefer on our schedule. We're representing ETIC. I don't see him here. Is there anybody else that's taking his place? If not, we'll move on to Natasha Dolzell from OHSU.
Chairs Dembro and Johnson, members of the committee. My name is Natasha Dolezal from Oregon Health and Science University, and I'm just here briefly to testify in support of the bill. I've submitted written testimony from our provost who couldn't be here today, but it outlines the long-standing history we've had of supporting STEM education. OHSU is aware that our success is dependent on having students who are well-educated in STEM areas. We've already talked about the pipeline, and OHSU is very concerned about making sure that we have enough students in that pipeline that we can fill the slots that we have so that we can create the workforce that Oregon needs. We've spoken with Representative Dembro, and we've seen the amendments that increase the size of the task force. OHSU hopes to just have a voice on the task force and be able to participate fully. So we're hopeful that we'll have continued discussions about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
The last one I have on the list today would be Nikki Tirzoff.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Johnson, Chair Dembro, members of the committee. I appreciate this opportunity just to echo all of the wonderful positive statements that have come before me. You all remember, I'm sure, the hearing on the 19th, and we had our wonderful student from FIRST Robotics, Mary, who was going to be a wedding planner before FIRST and building robots really changed her life and opened up her horizons. So I stand or sit before you today in favor of the Dash 2 amendments. We think it is important to expand the circle of voices. There are so many conversations that have been going on without connection that if we can help house that and create that connection, I think we'll really be able to do something here for Oregon.
Before you get away, could I have you please identify yourself?
Yes. Just for my name is Nikki Tirzoff, and I am here on behalf of FIRST Robotics.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Discussion, comments? Okay. Thank you very much. Well, we did we open up a work session on this?
No.
Okay. We'll go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 4056. Are there any motions that we would like to?
Can I ask a question?
Certainly.
In terms of the, I noticed there's a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, but as I read the fiscal impact statement, it looks like we have a minimal fiscal impact. Is your plan to request rescission of that?
We've requested that, and it hasn't come back unanimous in terms of that rescission, if you will. So we're still working through that, but I think for the time being, we can pass it on and hope that we'll have our best path forward.
Send it to Ways and Means?
Rather than Ways?
At this point, if we're going to move the bill, we don't have any other path at this point.
We haven't received agreement between the speakers to have the referral rescinded, and that doesn't appear to be something that will change. And we need both speakers to agree.
Well, I would just express the concern. This is going to be an awfully long session. If we ask LFO for fiscal impact statements, they say, don't worry about it, it's minimal, and then we send bills down to Ways and Means.
It's my understanding that there's going to be a lot of task force and group bills down there in Ways and Means being investigated. I think there's just a lot of scrutiny that's being put into this process, and it might be difficult to circumvent that at this point. So we have attempted, though.
You would kill it.
I do believe, Mr. Chair, I do believe that this is a bill that has the support of leadership, and there will be a lot of support for this bill in the legislature. And I, you know, my preference would be that, you know, we pass it to the House floor and then it get a hearing in the Senate Education Committee. You know, that would be the preferred route for me. But, you know, I do believe that we have a path to passage, even, you know, if it goes to Ways and Means. You know, I think at the end of the day, in Ways and Means, the co-chairs will look at it and see that it has no fiscal impact, and it will move over to the side of those that move forward.
And that was the point, frankly, of having some of the testimony today to show that there is great support for this bill out there. So we're doing everything we can to get on the record the fact that there are people willing to minimize that to whatever extent they can so that there is nothing during the fiscal impact. So we're in a work session. We can entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I would move adoption of the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 4056.
Mm-hmm. Shepherd Dembro has moved the adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 1/31/12. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So moved.
Mr. Chair,
mm-hmm.
I move House Bill 4056 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Dembro has moved House Bill 4056 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion?
Representative. Mr. Chair, I'm prepared. I'm not making this motion, but I'm prepared to move that we table this motion until coming Monday. Give the chairs a chance to explore the possibility of rescinding the Ways and Means referral. Would that be something the chairs would look at favorably?
If it's the desire, I mean, just Ms. Chair, if it's the desire of the committee, I certainly would look at it favorably. I don't know what you think.
We're at that key point. I think we're going to probably kind of determine the terms of engagement on a number of bills, and there could be some value in taking a breather and just finding out what is going to be the process, because obviously we're not the only committee in this establishment. We do have other committee bills that are going to involve the addition of other work groups and or task forces as well. It might be nice to find out what is the proper, you know, terms that we're going to have to engage with. Are they all going to be automatic referrals to Ways and Means, or are they not? Are there ways to, you know, go direct to the floor as long as we can get a minimal LFO forecast on that? So,
well, Mr. Chair, then I would put on the table a motion to table the motion for approval to time certain committee meeting Tuesday, not Monday.
Next meeting will be Tuesday. Okay. So how do we do that now? We have a motion and then we have another motion.
The motion to table supersedes.
Okay. So Representative Greenlick has motioned that we actually table the motion to send House Bill 4056 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and so forth. Is there any further discussion of that? Any objection to that?
There's a motion to time certain.
Motion to reconsider as of our meeting on Tuesday.
Table until Tuesday.
Table until Tuesday. Sure. Representative Parker.
And we are doing this, my understanding is, out of the belief that if we can get that rescinded, the bill will have a smoother path through.
That is our hope,
that somehow we can get to that point. Mm-hmm. If we can't get to that point, I would hope that we would send it on anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
So would I.
Right. We're
just committed
to
wait a short period of time, defined amount of time.
We have the time to
hope so we can get it greased the skids, so to speak.
Let's give one more shot for us to see whether we can do this.
I think, and just to add to that, that it would make for a smoother progress, but also that it would allow it to have a good hearing in our counterpart committee over on the Senate side, which I think is appropriate for this kind of policy bill.
Comment? Yes, Representative Sheehan. Yep.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dembro said that that it's unlikely to change. Is that how unlikely?
Well, we don't know. I mean, I guess I'll ask. It's possible.
Okay.
That discussion just began this afternoon, so they're really pretty fresh. The topic just came up today.
I don't see any downside to waiting until Tuesday.
We've got time on our schedule to give it an up or down on Tuesday. So, all right, then we will adopt the motion to table the bill until Tuesday, which time we'll pick it up again. With that, we are done for the day.
Okay.
Meeting adjourned.